information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border on shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
That's what it means to be United Nations. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 212 from Media Monarchy. It's April Fool's Day, April 1st, 2011. And my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, United Nations of Sound and Mixtape Mutilation. Japanese crisis updates and harpy exposure, Chicago source code and Al CIA to notes, Libya liberals and the March madness of April Fools, plus all the latest alternative media from Ground Zero, Korber Report, Food World Order, Holy Hexes, Cyberspace War, and so much more. It's April 1st, 2011, episode 212 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Come back down.
Are you ready? Are you ready? That's Richard Ashcroft and the United Nations of Sound with a lead cut from the new record, United Nations of Sound. That was released last year in the UK. It just finally saw stateside release just last week. And unfortunately, that song has been used and abused in sports advertisements and bad movie trailers. But we're taking it back. Like Charles Manson stole from the Beatles. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 212 of Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and simulcast worldwide thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. ZeroPointRadio.com even busted out terrestrially. Hello, Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. And thanks to all the other stations that help spread the word and rebroadcast Media Monarchy. Too many to mention here now. But big thanks to Radio23.org and TragedyAndHope.com. We are, of course, on all the social network bells and whistles, FaceSpace, TwitterTube, and more. You can get in touch with me, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. We're also on Skype. And I implore you to check out the donate button on the top right of the page on MediaMonarchy.com. Your support helps keep us going and growing. And I want to throw out a thanks to our latest donors, Michael in Santa Clara, California. Hey, I've been there. And thanks again to Robin in Indianapolis. Again, that's what makes this grow. And I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Not a whole lot of April fooling, because there's too many things going on. Too many massively important things, and that's why I'm here to try and shed a light on all the things going on in the world of alternative news and open source intelligence, politics, conspiracies, cover-ups, media, memes, all of it. The most jam-packed two-hour show you are going to find. If we glance at the breaking news this morning, April 1st, 2011, Libyan rebels offer ceasefire. Does Gaddafi have the upper hand? Meanwhile, mob kills 8 United Nations workers in Afghanistan. And back here in the North American Union, the job market gains momentum, meaning it's not as horrifically low as it has been. Unless you're a has-been. So we'll always keep an eye peeled on the breaking news to see if anything happens as we're live here on the air. And like I said, not a lot of fooling going on. Or as we've said before, you know why they call it March Madness? You'd have to be out of your mind to be paying attention to sports and bread and circuses at a time like this. And I thought about trying to do something special for April Fools or something funny. I also thought about taking the week off. But again, too much going on. One bright note is yesterday I published mixtape number 8 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's called On a Wave of Mutilation. And it features music from Bill Haley and the Comets, Polyphonic Spree, Uncle, The Pixies, Air, NXS, Supergrass, Spiritualized, Radiohead, and tons more, all mixed for your pleasure with a definite undercurrent of weather wars and solar storms. One of those tracks in that mixtape from Uncle features Richard Ashcroft, who we heard at the beginning of this episode, so as we say here, I'm just trying to put together the story of the week and connect the dots with whether you want to call it the predictive programming or the synchromysticism or just following the signs, studying the semiology, matching the memes, and it definitely seems to be United Nations of Sound. So mixtape number 8 is available. Remember, if you subscribe, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy, you won't miss a thing. The mixtapes are always high quality. It's a nice, tight hour. And again, I'm an old school college radio programmer, so that's really where my heart is. But I'm posing as a newsman. So, my friends, so much to do. Let's see if we can cram all this in a mere 2 hours. The March 31st News Purge posted to MediaMonarchy.com asking a question we asked at the beginning of the show. Are you ready? Terror intel lacking 10 years after, say, 9/11 Commission Chairman. That article is from Bloomberg, but what they don't collate for you is all of the instances in which most, if not all, of the members of the 9/11 Commission have said in one way or another they were underfunded, they were stonewalled, they were set up to fail. It was a farce. Bin Laden sets alarm bells ringing. That's from atimes.com. Oh, yes. Emmanuel Goldstein always lurking, yet never found. A disgusting story from New York. City interrupts wake to take back the corpse of 9/11 first responder. We get it from 911blogger.com, but I believe it sources back to the New York Post. There was a funeral for a guy who had been autopsied as dying from the toxic dust at Ground Zero. You know, the dust that the EPA said was safe to breathe. Just like they now say that the radiation is good for you. They didn't like that ruling about the toxic dust, so they stole his corpse back in the middle of the wake. That's how you treat heroes. But our last 9/11 update is a good one. The new Building 7 ad is here, and you can go to rememberbuilding7.org.
I lost my husband,
my son,
my uncle,
my nephew, September 11th, 2001.
Most people don't know a third tower fell that day.
The government says fire brought it down.
The collapse of World Trade Center 7 was primarily due to fires.
I, along with 1,400 other architects and engineers,
have found the government's conclusion to be physically impossible.
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 We need the truth about what happened that day.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org.
Why it fell, why it matters, and what you can do.
And that, of course, is from the folks who brought us buildingwhat.org. On to the econo crash. General Electric paid no federal taxes in 2010. So as allgov.com asks, if GE doesn't pay taxes, why the hell should you? Meanwhile, in response to this, groups now calling for General Electric's Jeffrey Immelt to resign from his cushy White House Jobs Council position. It's a revolving door for the cronies in the middle management here in the crumbling old world order. Meanwhile, housing market shows that 13% of all U.S. homes are vacant. It's not just deadmalls.com. And we can see it around the world. From The Guardian, nightmare for residents trapped in Spanish ghost towns. Well, what do you do to try and fix that kind of stuff? Well, Virginia is about to be the first state to sell naming rights to rest stops. That's right. Very soon you'll be able to stop and take a leak at the Geico... whatever. Our last Econo Crash note is an update to this news purge from the economiccollapseblog.com. Walmart says serious inflation is coming. A couple of history mystery notes. New book claims Gandhi left his wife for a male lover. More on that from the Daily Mail. From the register.co.uk, FBI asks for help to crack the mystery code in a 1999 murder case. And our last history mystery note from the New York Times. This is a conspiracy. Quote unquote, Nixon Library opens doors. Some would prefer stay closed. Our media memes, headlines, notes, again from the New York Times. The new film Source Code The headline from the New York Times' source code is "Strangers on a Train with Explosives." And if we read about the film Source Code, the new film from Duncan Jones, the son of David Bowie, the director of Moon, you'll see that the film is kind of a sci-fi piece with Jake Gyllenhaal traveling back through some type of Matrix-y thing where he goes back to try and stop a terror train blast in Chicago. We have noted, and quite recently, that Chicago seems to be in the crosshairs if we connect the dots at previous action. We now see Rahm Emanuel becoming the mayor of Chicago. We know that Larry Silverstein, he of Pull It, Building 7, and more, he owns the Sears Tower. Once you tie in the Obama Chicago cronies, it's in the crosshairs for false flag activity. Again, that is the problem, reaction, solution. So, Source Code, Chicago train bomb predictive programming is Strangers on a Train. And we find that just a couple of days ago, the star of Alfred Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train has passed away, Farley Granger. We'll note more on that in just a moment. And it's interesting, I tweeted that out. Source Code is Strangers on a Train with Explosives, with the parts about the Chicago train bomb predictive programming. And it was interesting to see some of my friends that retweeted it, knowing they're completely not down with any crazy conspiracy stuff. But that's good. We can plant the seeds and plant the memes. So, yes, Farley Granger, Strangers on a Train star, dead at 85. More on that from HollywoodMemoir.com. So, we'll just speculate. You know, can we look at Rahm Emanuel as Farley Granger, and is he going to accidentally bump his foot into another guy on the train, and they'll trade murders? That way there's no motive pointing back to each other, crisscross. Furthermore, down the media memes from the BBC, Dave Grohl still has questions after Cobain death. This is about the rebirth and reemergence of Foo Fighters, and they get into some of the Nirvana questions, and he basically only says, "I have questions just like everyone else," but does not elaborate. Meanwhile, the Council on Foreign Relations, George Clooney, has been named a defense witness in the Berlusconi sex trial. That is also from the BBC and from the AtlanticWire.com. Madonna's African charity displaced villagers and wasted $3.8 million. Fancy cars, golf course memberships, chauffeurs, free housing, all for a vanity project and all surrounding the Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah that Madonna surrounds herself with. That shouldn't come as a surprise at all, because we can know that even our savior Oprah has been involved in shady schools. So these vanity projects always somehow seem to lead right back to the overarching eugenics agenda. A couple interesting notes on winning. Charlie Sheen and Apocalypse Now, A Lasting Obsession. That's the first of two interesting bits from Skull and Bones-owned Time magazine. If you're a fan of Apocalypse Now, and if you're interested in the background of the Sheens and the Knights of Malta and the Jesuits and all of those things, it's all right in there. The other interesting bit is a slideshow from Time where they wonder, is Charlie Sheen trapped in a conspiracy movie? And they go through all of his films and note how so many, many, many of them have to do with conspiracies. Now, that may not be that fantastic when we think that's the most leveled charge in the federal government against we the people. It's always a conspiracy charge. And conspiracy, by definition, is at least two people agreeing to something in secret. That's probably illegal. And so in his films, whether it's Eight Men Out or Red Dawn or any of the others that I can't remember, but again, that's worth checking out. And as if it all hasn't gotten quite so ridiculous enough, let's have a little light note. By way of blacklistednews.com, we're not going to listen to all 14 life lessons, but just let's have a little bit of a flashback and remember some of our life lessons from He-Man.
Being the most powerful man in the universe isn't all that makes He-Man such a great hero. Being strong is fine, but there's something even better. In today's story, He-Man used something even more powerful than his muscles to beat Skeletor. You know what it was? If you said his brain, you were right. And just like a muscle, your brain is something you can develop to give yourself great power. In today's story, Skeletor was looking for a shortcut, a quick way to riches and power. You may know some people like that, always looking for the quick way to get ahead of everybody else. But it doesn't work that way. The people who succeed are the ones who work for what they want. So don't be fooled by those who say they have a sure thing. There's always a catch to it. Don't sell yourself short. The right way is the best way. Until later. In today's story, Zagraz had a problem. He lost his confidence in himself because he had once failed. Well, now, we all fail sometimes, but we should never be afraid to try again. And we should always keep believing in ourselves. As the old saying goes, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Until later. Bye.
Just a few positive life lessons that we should remember. Do we get any of that from kids' TV nowadays? These kids today. So let's move from light to much, much darker for our murder and mayhem headlines from North Carolina. Mystery bullet hole found in a plane. Meanwhile, in my neighbors to the north, two Washington men have been arrested and charged with murder in a filmed torture and murder. That's from Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And right here in Portlandia, teenage friend of missing Portland girl arrested, charged with murder. She has not been found. And we move to our Police State International updates and hop on down to Phoenix, where a tank, a SWAT team, and Steven Seagal all fly in for a nice photo op. And what was it? It was a cockfighting arrest. Yes, we need SWAT teams for that now. Meanwhile, emergency plans in Louisville raise eyebrows. More on that from dailycamera.com. Essentially, they'll claim of whatever they want to take whatever you have. DHS process of vetting FOIA requests bananas, says Insider. That's the nice way of putting it from TPM Muckraker. That's Talking Points memo of saying Obama's Department of Homeland Security stonewalls FOIA requests. Thanks, Napolitano. Oh, but she had no idea. Just like she had no idea about the gun running between the ATF and Mexican drug cartels. Meanwhile, St. Louis Girl Scouts banned from selling cookies on their own front lawn. That's right. That's what it has come to now. That's from the economiccollapseblog.com. And the last note in Police State International is at least a positive one. Tasered 86-year-old wins Oklahoma excessive force trial against the police. And our last bit on this 3:31 news purge, are you ready? Our one note of West Virginia worry, grab a brew while they face death. Cole on Spike TV aims to attract male viewers, and they do bring out a couple of interesting bits, so let's go into it. In a trailer for Cole, a new series on Spike about mining in West Virginia, a coal-grimy Jeremy Allville says, life in the mines is dangerous, and it will make your wife a widow. A few hundred miles northeast on 7th Avenue in Manhattan, across the street from Madison Avenue, or rather, Madison Square Garden, MSG, a stark black-and-white billboard plugging coal looks as out of place as a stockbroker in a coal mine. But Spike knows the audience for coal and its brawny brethren like Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers. It's the mostly white-collar guys who go to Knicks and Rangers games, the baby-handed men who commute between Penn Station, beneath the Garden, and the suburbs. It's an uneasy modern dynamic. The men on these documentary reality shows sacrifice their bodies and risk their lives going down in dangerous jobs and try to provide a good life for themselves and their families. But what the producers and viewers want is what they call good TV. In this case, working-class fantasies aimed at men craving televised booster shots of testosterone. Ratings show that these series consistently reel in men in the prized but elusive 18 to 49 age group, many of them upscale. This is tough guy TV that guzzles beer and pounds its hairy chest. It's veined with blood and lots of bleeps, tats and sweat, and there's no shortage of it. Axemen, Black Gold, Swamp People, Deadliest Catch, blah, blah, blah. It is a fantasy for the metrosexual male who has pretty much been completely neutered and who has nothing real that he feels like he has to fight for. So he gets wrapped up in March Madness and other bread and circus garbage. Instead of getting angry and agitated and active about what's really going down all around us, and we see it, it's pretty friggin' obvious right now. But oh no, I'll watch Dancing with the Stars. Please, just, you know, Howard Beale says it. Oh, just leave me alone. Just let me have my TV and I won't say anything. Well, I'm not gonna leave you alone. We have two new episodes of NewWorldNextWeek.com, episode 66 on the Japanese crisis, posted up last Saturday, a couple days late, because again, James Corbett, he's a one-man band as well, and we're doing our best and working our hardest for you to share this open-source intelligence. The Japanese crisis, in just a few short days, has become our most-watched episode and are now over a year-long series of NewWorldNextWeek.com. It got picked up by some of the biggest alternative news sites out there, and it went viral, and it's nearing, I believe, at this moment, 13,000-some views. It's one of the very few episodes where we stay on a particular subject. The only other one we've done one topic was about WikiLeaks, and interestingly enough, that's our other biggest and most viewed episode, so that may say something there. But this episode, 66, covers the Japanese crisis. And of course, James Corbett is there in Japan. And he is now focusing on this situation. And we'll get to more of that in just a moment. But we also now have episode 67 of NewWorldNextWeek.com posted yesterday. Food inflation, Libya liberals, and EPA exposure. And we will touch on all of those topics here in episode 212 from Media Monarchy. However, the latest from CorbettReport.com, post-hiatus, first episode, what caused the 3/11 earthquake? Japan is only barely now just tallying up the damage from the devastating earthquake that struck off the northeast coast on 3/11. But it is clear that this was already one of the most powerful earthquakes in modern Japanese history. Now, some are asking whether this was a natural earthquake or if it was precipitated by human activities. This episode 179, What Caused the 3/11 Earthquake, goes in search of a man-made fingerprint on the 3/11 earthquake. One of the latest videos, Sunday Update series, radiation rising at Fukushima, and some of the latest interviews with Philip White and Najmuddin Meshkati, all focusing upon the Japanese crisis. So as I've said, these now last 3 weeks have we been tracking this information. We'll always just say again and implore you to send whatever you have to James Corbett. My man Clyde Lewis lost his radio station, but that ain't going to stop him. GroundZeroMedia.org fights on, and he is still producing articles, and he's even working on a live stream. He was on last Sunday night And you can get that information on groundzeromedia.org. But the most recent article posted, One Nation Under God, Zilla. Is it all signs that it's the end of the world? Perhaps, but no one really knows. This could all also be a reminder that the Earth is not dying. It is very much alive. Our ideas of an end can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. A tulpa, as Clyde talks about. So instead of thinking it's the end of the world, why not just accept that this is our world? Klein also has related earthquake images from Japan, 1923. Another catastrophic earthquake. This article is quite fascinating. This is, you tie in the cultural history of Japan with the atomic bomb and the pop culture with Godzilla and now the nuclear plants. Are these things some type of self-fulfilling prophecy? Again, as Clyde notes at the bottom of every page on groundzeromedia.org, these articles are speculative in nature, but they're fascinating to get your synapses firing and thinking about things, and that's one of the great things that I love what Clyde Lewis does. So again, he needs your support as well. We've all got donate buttons. Just a few dollars here and there really does make a difference, because the more people giving just a few dollars, many hands make light work. So we go from One Nation Under God, Zilla, to our latest Japan crisis updates. And this story we do cover on the latest New World Next Week episode, so I will keep it brief because you can get the whole text that I've already read and we've already discussed there. EPA helps mainstream media obscure the truth about radiation exposure. Government responds to this nuclear accident by trying to raise acceptable radiation levels and pretending that radiation is good for you. We get that from WashingtonsBlog.com, but the main body of this post comes from Activist Post. And we note, March Madness, Dancing with the Stars, that's far more entertaining than worrying about some radioactive plume spreading all around the world. But the heart of this article, the heart of this piece, the EPA, the folks that said the air was safe to breathe at Ground Zero 7 days after 9/11, a notorious, infamous, on its face lie. Well, now they're going to try and change the protective action guides. They're going to raise the PAGs, P-A-Gs, the protective action guides. They're basically going to raise all the levels and say, oh, well, now 1,000 times more of this is okay for you now. That somehow magically, just as the laws of physics changed on 9/11, apparently now human physiology has also changed, and we can now stand a 1,000-fold increase of exposure to strontium-90. Or a 100,000-fold increase of exposure to iodine-131, or a 25,000-fold rise for exposure to radioactive nickel-63. You can go look at these documents. They are obtained by PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. And at the time of all this now being days ago, the writing of this article, toxic cloud irradiation has not only reached the West Coast, where I'm soaking in it now here in the People's Republic of Oregon, but oh, don't worry. We can go watch the Trailblazers basketball. So not only is it here on the West Coast, all over the West Coast, but it's spread all across the country to states like South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, and Massachusetts. And we do have all of our other updates on the Japanese crisis posted as headlines below this main piece. EPA helps mainstream media obscure the truth about radiation exposure. Weather models show high levels of radiation entering the U.S. That's from Kurt Nimmo. Gaps in U.S. radiation monitoring system revealed. That's from the Associated Press. Oops, our monitoring systems don't work. Health officials try to calm U.S. anxiety as Japan radiation fears rise. Meanwhile, Japanese radiation reaches Alabama. And I love this headline from TimesOnline.com. Rain will contain more radiation than normal. In other news, gunshot victim losing more blood than normal. Again, from Washington's blog, radioactive iodine exceeding maximum containment levels for drinking water found in Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. From the intelhub.com, Fukushima radiation found in Massachusetts rainwater as biorobots fight to prevent disaster. Naturalnews.com reporting on false radiation readings, radioactive water, and anti-nuclear protesters. Meanwhile, the FDA says radiation found in U.S. milk poses no risk. Japan's nuclear crisis worsens. Fukushima goes Chernobyl. That's from News Junkie Post, and we're essentially going in chronological order, and it's getting from bad to worse. TEPCO says groundwater at nuclear plant highly contaminated. Radiation levels reach new highs as conditions worsen for workers. That's from the Washington Post. Plutonium detected in the soil at Fukushima nuke plant. That is from Kyoto News. Japan may have lost the race to save nuclear reactor. From climateprogress.org. Japanese Prime Minister, maximum alert over Fukushima nuke crisis. Fukushima plant now in full meltdown. Plant to be entombed in concrete after radiation leak. That's from the Daily Mail. And if you want a little perspective on this, remember over the previous 2 weeks, they're, oh, this is nothing like Chernobyl. This is, oh, it's, you know, like Mr. Burns said. We're working on preventing something, you know, that could have been a Chernobyl and just kind of keep it as a mere three-mile island. We're now beyond Chernobyl levels. That's becoming fairly freaking obvious. An interesting post from villageofjoy.com. Chernobyl today, a creepy story told in pictures. NPR reporting on the public anger against nuclear power mounting in Japan. But that's not going to stop Walmart. The ones who we just noted a little bit ago said that serious inflation is coming to America. Well, they're going to reopen stores in quake-ravaged areas of eastern Japan. Whew. And our latest update to this, again from Kyoto News, man arrested after breaking into Fukushima premises. He admitted to breaking in. He admitted to destruction of property. What we do not know yet is why. Now, we do have the flashback link to our previous post on the Japanese disaster from here to eternity. Those are the updates we went over last week. And at the end of that posting, you get the flashback link to our original posting on the Japanese crisis as you can track it back. And again, I don't have it all figured out. I'm just trying to lay it out and connect some dots, and hopefully we can all share and make sense of this and not freak out and be prepared. So within those updates we just blasted through, of course, contains tons of other articles, tons of other sources and documentation, and multiple instances of audio and video. So yet again, we've put together a compilation getting our updates on the Japanese crisis.
The plutonium was detected around the nuclear power plants that are damaged and still being battled to keep them under control. This isn't particularly surprising. We would expect to see this because there have been other radioactive releases of other radionuclides, as they're called. Now, plutonium, though, has a special mystique. When people hear the word plutonium, they think about bombs, and that's appropriate. That's what bombs are made of. But our ability to measure and detect plutonium is so incredibly sensitive that it doesn't necessarily mean that this is an immediate risk. People get nervous when they hear the word. What it does tell us is that it bears watching. There's plutonium in the soils now. We need to pay very careful attention. If even the worst were to happen, if we had a complete meltdown, for example, of one of the spent fuel pools, there would be an awful lot of radiation released. But the next question is, how hot is the source? How high up in the sky does it get released? Yes, potentially there is a chance that radioactivity could travel even across the ocean. But the likelihood of that, and even if it were to happen, the amount and the intensity of the radiation would be so minimal. What is really of concern is the immediate vicinity of the reactor. And by immediate vicinity, I mean 10, 20, maybe even 30 miles out. And the longevity of it. How long are these radionuclides going to stay in the soil, in the water? And that's like with Chernobyl, like even with Three Mile Island, we're going to have to continue to watch this decades out. My fear is that people who live around that power plant won't be able to return there to live. They're going to have to be relocated.
To Japan now, where the government is considering the construction of a containment shell at a damaged Fukushima nuclear power plant. It would be aimed at averting further radiation leaks in a crisis that is still being described as grave. The plan would involve the three most badly damaged reactors being covered with high-tech material. The level of radiation measured in seawater near the site is now said to be around 3,500 times higher than normal. Workers have been unsuccessfully trying to restore the cooling system at the facility in what is now the worst atomic crisis since Chernobyl. RT spoke to nuclear energy expert Lars Palmier, who says there are parallels with that disaster 25 years ago.
Plutonium is a very, very dangerous and harmful substance. Even in very small quantities, plutonium, if it is ingested by a human body, almost certainly leads to the development of cancer. There's no concept how to monitor and how to store the radioactive fuel, which will radiate for many, many, many thousands of years. What we know from information provided by IAEA already last week, already a significant amount of radioactive substance were released. It might lead to a situation where we can compare the two, Chernobyl and Fukushima, if it comes to the amount of release of radioactive substances. Plus, at this time, that there's a danger of the release of plutonium.
Fears of radiation exposure in the United States that were stirred anew today. The FDA reported higher than normal levels of radioactive iodine-131 in milk samples from California and Washington. Now, those levels, however, were tiny, far less than what we're exposed to naturally every day, and they're still deemed safe. They're 5,000 times below the danger threshold, okay? But the contamination around Japan's stricken nuclear plant is very dangerous indeed. Radioactive iodine there is now 10,000 times the permissible limit. Here's David Wright.
Today, more bad news from the reactor. Radiation levels rose dramatically. Radioactive iodine is now at 10,000 times the permissible limit. Radioactive cesium, 500 times what's allowed. Both isotopes increase the risk of cancer. And cesium lingers for 30 years. This sign says off limits, but it's not like there's anyone here to object. 20 kilometers out from the plant, the radiation levels are too toxic for manned checkpoints. So this Japanese camera crew simply drives on past. Everyone was ordered to evacuate nearly 3 weeks ago at the first sign of trouble. They left in a hurry. Trains just stopped, dead on the tracks. Family pets left behind are eager for their masters to come home. At a bus stop, the poster for a political campaign. It says the countryside is the place of new beginnings. The candidate and the voters are gone. Just 12 miles away, hundreds of workers are still struggling valiantly to tame the reactors, and the pressure is taking its toll. In email messages published by the Wall Street Journal, several of them explain that the reactor is just one of their worries. There were many workers whose houses were washed away, reads one email. My entire hometown was washed away by the tsunami. My parents were washed away by the tsunami, and I don't know where they are. Everyone has lost everything. Their home, their job, their school, their friends, their families. Who could stand for this reality? This may be the next generation of frontline workers at the reactor, a robot called Helios 9.
Is it time to bring in the robots?
Yeah, I hope so.
Dr. Hiroshi Shigeo, a robotics expert at Tokyo Institute of Technology, has plenty of options to choose from.
These are the snake-like robots.
He has robots that jump, crawl, and shimmy.
I can totally see the logic of it, but at the same time, I wonder, have I seen too many movies?
He says the main way these robots can help is reconnaissance and radiation monitoring.
Of course, it's very difficult, and it doesn't work just like science fiction.
Obviously, for the tough jobs, there's no substitute for human skill and bravery. These men are members of the Tokyo Fire Department's elite hyper-rescue squad, among the first responders at the reactor. Their commander explains it was their job to drag a hose more than a half a mile from the sea to the reactor. He says there were places we had to crawl through bits of rubble where it was only wide enough for one man. I'd imagine you couldn't stay in there very long. Only half an hour, he says, because the radiation was so intense.
I don't want to ask you to wade into politics, but I wonder, were these guys playing with fire at that reactor?
It's a complicated question.
Yes, he says. From a risk management perspective, if they had taken certain precautions, I wouldn't have had to put my men in harm's way. The firemen volunteered. The people living near the reactor had no choice. Not everyone left. A few ignored the evacuation order. This man's a rice farmer. Despite the danger, he refuses to leave his home in the evacuation zone. We have plenty to eat, he says. We're self-sufficient. We grow it all ourselves. Never mind that the government has banned agricultural products from this region. The produce and the dairy farmed here considered unsafe for human consumption. This old man is 94. I was in the war, he says, so I understand. He says this is worse than World War II. Wars you can survive, but this stuff is different. There's no escaping it. It spreads with the wind and could end up killing everyone in Japan. This week, a Tokyo newspaper reported that an organic farmer here hanged himself. The tsunami had wiped out his farm and his warehouse. Then the reactor poisoned his soil. He saw no way to cultivate a future in this wasteland. I'm David Wright for Nightline in Tokyo.
We'll continue with the remainder of our Japan crisis updates, but we'll grab our related BioWars Enviro Health updates posted below our EPA mainstream media cover-up story. AllGov.com and USA Today reporting on 42 disease clusters identified in 13 states. Meanwhile, IV bag infections kill 9 in an Alabama hospital. As they say, if you want to get sick, go to a hospital. Just like if you want to learn how to really be a criminal, get into the prison industrial complex. Meanwhile, Commerce Department forbids biologists from releasing data regarding Gulf dolphin deaths. That's your Obama-sized Commerce Department. Continuing the cover-up of the Gulf oil spill. And as we've noted here and speculated, doesn't it seem as though every major event in the Obama-Saya era is an enviro catastrophe? Swine flu, mining disasters, Gulf oil spill, Japan radiation. Meanwhile, Pfizer recalls citalopram and finasteride due to possible mislabeling. That's from the Examiner. Finasteride sounds like something you take out the window. But anyway, Earth Hour hoax barely works on wannabe greenies, much less anyone else anymore. And anyone else can know and look up quite easily Club of Rome and the First Global Revolution, where, thanks to Cecil Rhodes and the Roundtable groups, and of course Rhodes scholars who push the message, such as Rachel Maddow or Bill Clinton, they knew and wrote that a fake environmental crisis would fit the bill. And our last note on BioWars Enviro Health update, secret presidential chemtrail budget uncovered. Congress spending billions to spray the populace like roaches. But just don't call it chemtrails. They'll call you a crazy person. But if you talk about geoengineering, you'll get to the heart of it. We're going to pick up our other related Japan crisis updates on one of my sister sites, cyberspacewar.com. And again, huge thanks to Alan in Omaha for lead editing duties on cyberspacewar.com. What does Germany know? Why has Germany taken the drastic action of shutting down its 7 oldest reactors and doing safety checks for the remaining online nuclear plants? Is it Stuxnet? The German nuclear power industry may have decided to act before there is another Chernobyl or Fukushima. We have only briefly discussed the connection of Stuxnet to Fukushima. And you can find more on that in the archives on cyberspacewar.com. We also have the Japan disaster in the Illuminati cards. That would be the Steve Jackson Illuminati card game that has attracted attention for numerous cards that seem to predict predictive programming disaster events that somehow have played out live. The latest is the Combined Disasters cards, where it seems to show poor Japanese villagers running from death and destruction, and the tower, which seems to resemble the tower in Tokyo, has 311 on the face of the clock, and you can go down that rabbit hole. Loren Moray, radiation expert, states, quite matter-of-factly, that the Japan disaster could be the result of tectonic nuclear warfare, and notes and has predicted California to be next. There was a FEMA announcement on 9/10/2001 that ranked the top three disasters likely to befall the United States. Two on the list, a terrorist attack on New York and a hurricane in New Orleans, of course, transitioned into the realm of fact. The third is an earthquake in San Francisco. A 2004 Japan Times article by Loren Moray called Japan's Deadly Game of Nuclear Roulette appears prophetic in its urgency and is a must-read. And I believe Loren Moray, I know, has been to Portland before and may be returning again. But the latest posted on cyberspacewar.com, Harpies. Harping on harp. Are you a hopeless harpy? Do you finger harp at the first sign of an improbable natural catastrophe? Are you accused of having a one-track mind when it comes to harp? It's true, there are other plausible causes, even other forms of scalar weapons and quantum potential weapons. Jane Burgermeister is the latest to fall prey to the impulse in a recent article, Did Harp Cause the Earthquake in Japan? And as if you didn't know, HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project, ostensibly to communicate with submarines, but perhaps esoterically to manipulate the weather and even perhaps your mind. An interesting related update from exopoliticsinstitute.org notes that the European Parliament issued warnings on HARP 13 years ago. And why would the U.S. and Russia sign treaties saying they wouldn't use weather weapons if weather weapons don't exist? So as long as we're here on cyberspacewar.com, we're going to pick up our other unrelated updates as we move away from the Japanese crisis updates. We've got a post on the December 1965 Kecksburg, Pennsylvania event. We also have a post on the 1953 Kinross incident. We also have a post on space junk. And we've touched on space junk before on cyberspacewar.com. And you can get more on that from CNN, Wikipedia, on and on. And we'll pick up the March 31st DEF CON on Cyberspace War. That's our list of headlines. Morpheus Aurora's Smart Bombs and OMGs. We begin with a piece from Danger Room, where the secret space plane can't hide from amateur sleuths, or as Space.com notes, secret X-37B space plane caught on video by Sky Watchers. Meanwhile, the big wobble.com notes that NASA seems to be tracking a, quote, large object approaching the sun. And from Fox News, asking the question, will Morpheus be the first vehicle on the moon since Apollo?
We have been promising you the moon for the past 46 minutes, and now we're going to bring it to you. Lauren Grush is here with her FoxNews.com exclusive. Something called Morpheus, the first vehicle on the moon since Apollo?
Yeah, can you believe it? It's been about 40 years since we've been back, since we went to the moon in the first place, and a group of scientists at NASA are ready to take us back. And so they've created this full-functioning lunar lander called Morpheus, and it's really neat. They're testing it on site at Johnson Space Center in May, and it's really the first time in many years that a bunch of engineers at NASA have built a vehicle since the shuttle.
Now, this is going to be a vehicle that can carry people, or it is one of these unmanned vehicles?
Right now, it can't carry people, but it's meant to test lunar lander technology, so they're hoping to eventually create a bigger version that will be able to take people to the moon.
Now, this is in the wake of a lot of budget cuts at NASA.
Exactly. And so what's really great about this is that they've been able to shorten the price tag on it by doing a partnership with a private company called Armadillo Aerospace. And that's also what Obama has been promoting. He wants to do a collaboration between NASA and private companies, get it more commercial. And so this is just a great example of this, because the design and the idea came from Armadillo, and then NASA took it and kind of ran with it and created this Morpheus lunar lander.
Now, what's the time frame on this? When do they believe they can get it up to the moon?
Well, there's no concrete time frame right now, because it's still in the very early stages. But the great thing about this is that since they used Armadillo and since they're collaborating with these private companies, the time scale is going to be super short. There's talks now of going to Mars in maybe 2040. I don't know about you, but that's so long for me. I kind of want it to happen now. And so what will be great about this is that they can eventually have, you know, spacecrafts going to the moon in the next 10 years.
So this is what is the point of the mission? What do they want to achieve and prove through doing this?
Well, right now they want to show off what the lander can do, and it has some kind of cool techniques to it. It's testing this new technology called hazardous avoidance, and kind of like in Terminator, it can scan the surrounding areas and adjust its trajectory based on hazardous material in the area. And it also tests a new kind of propulsion system called liquid methane. And what's really neat about that is it's been shown that there is water on the moon in craters. And with this new propulsion system, they can take that water and eventually create their own fuel when they get to the moon. So you don't have to take all of your fuel with you. You can go there, create fuel, and then return with it. So it tests these kinds of technologies, and it also shows that, you know, it's time for a new project to come about at NASA. You know, there's once the shuttle program ends, there's really not much going on, and this will be their kind of, you know, ploy to get us back out there.
It's really neat. That is the level of a reportage coming from Fox News. Of course, back in January during the anniversary of the Challenger disaster, we noted the esoteric names or the twilight language used in the space program. The Enterprise of the United States, Columbia, shall be destroyed after completing its mission. Challengers shall be destroyed before completing their mission and replaced by our last British-led endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis. So we only have to wonder why they would name this Morpheus. Now, we can speculate that the secretive things like the X-37B doesn't really have very fancy names, because I don't believe we're meant to be paying very much attention to that. But the ones that are the big ones that get coverage on Fox News, they never have names, you know, like Super Space Blaster. They're always named with something in the ancient mystery religions that seem to relate to astrotheology. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Raw Replay posted up a stunningly beautiful time-lapse video of Aurora Borealis. It's amazing. It's high def. It's on Vimeo. And it's one of those things that you watch and you go, oh my God, I need to be doing that. It is really very stunningly beautiful. And it even has some music from Lisa Gerrard, ex of Dead Can Dance. Furthermore, on this 331 DEF CON, Morpheus, Aurora's smart bombs and OMGs, NSA said to focus its decrypting skills on NASDAQ cyber attack. We reported that to you last week. More on that from Bloomberg. Meanwhile, Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard's computer has been hacked. More on that from BBC. Threat Level notes that federal courts worry your smartphone might be a smart bomb. Meanwhile, Facebook says no to revolution for the Palestinians. If you are a foundation-funded color revolution with intelligence connections, you'll, of course, get massive coverage in the social networks that, of course, many like Facebook and Google set up with capital from NQTEL, the investment arm of the CIA. So when you fall in line with the agenda, you get lots of coverage. But if you're a Palestinian, your page gets axed. Our last note on this 331 DEFCON, OMG, online abbreviations make it into the Oxford English Dictionary. Our last note from Cyberspace War comes from the Telegraph and notes that MySpace loses 10 million users a month. Telegraph reporting MySpace lost 10 million unique users in 1 month at the start of the year. According to new figures, they note that Murdoch and News Corp are reportedly still trying to sell off the ailing social network. A couple of related updates posted below this. Facebook wants to add friends in Washington. That's from the New York Times. So how do they do that? Well, you get former Obama press secretary Robert Gibbs to join the Facebook executive branch. That's how they roll. So, my friends, before we continue on this jam-packed episode 212 from MediaMonarchy.com, let's take just a quick break for some April Fools.
Shame that your pockets did bleed on St. Valentine's, and you sat in a chair thinking, boy, I'm such a prince. Well, life's a train that goes from February on, day by day, but it's making a stop on April 1st. And you wild, thanks to ribbons that open sesame. But in the stars and closer to home, in every planet, it ain't hard for me and dear Joe, Joe, to say that you will believe in love and all that is supposed to be. Just until the fish starts to smell.
recorded, or rather released, 13 years ago next month. That's April Fools from the self-titled debut record from Rufus Wainwright, one of my favorites. It's a wall of sound popra masterpiece with production by John Bryan and Van Dyke Parks of Eternal Sunshine soundtrack and work with the Beach Boys, respectively. So, my friends, welcome back to episode 212 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April Fool's Day 2011, but we ain't fooling here because there's too much serious information to disseminate. And we are broadcasting live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FROlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, and on and on. Thanks to Radio23.org, TragedyAndHope.com, and all the other sites that help support and spread the word about Media Monarchy. Still so very much to go over. And as the episodes progress, even I see things that reveal themselves as we try and connect the dots here and turn over the shell game board, the three-card Monty sham being run on the corner. Letters claim Alcieta has nukes hidden across America. From theintelhub.com, 25 letters that claim nuclear bombs are hidden throughout the U.S. have been sent to multiple investigators and citizens in the Chicago area. The letter inside said, quote, the Al-Qaeda organization has planted 160 nuclear bombs throughout the U.S. in schools, stadiums, churches, stores, financial institutions, and government buildings. This is a suicide mission for us, end quote, reported CBS Chicago. While this news may be startling to many, it's no surprise to those in the alternative media. The idea of nukes in the U.S. has run rampant for years, with many believing rogue elements of our government will actually use these nukes within the U.S. to create enough chaos to initiate a world government. In 2002, the right-wing news organization WorldNet Daily reported that bin Laden had snuck over 20 suitcase nukes into the U.S. This report was one of the first out of a long line of fear-mongering reports that have been used to plant the idea of Al-Qaeda nuking us into the mind of everyday American citizens. Most remember the missing nukes report that broke in September 2007. That story was first reported by the Military Times after military servicemen leaked the story of the rogue B-52s from Minot. The fact that the Pentagon and the CIA run Al-Qaeda, the database of Mujahideen fighters that were on CIA payroll to fight the Soviets in the late 70s, thanks to Brzezinski and the Trilateral Commission, and, of course, even Robert Gates was there. The fact that the Pentagon and the CIA run Al-Qaeda, have dined with top terrorists like Anwar al-Awlaki, you know, at the White House, and they openly fund Al-Qaeda, just like in Libya now, more on that in just a little bit, seems to be completely unimportant to the corporate-controlled media. This isn't even a realistic option, yet reports like this are used to trick ignorant Americans into hating those evil Muslims even more. This also gives elements of our government the ability to say, told you so, if or when a nuke detonates in an American city.
The threats came in the mail. 25 letters that warn of nuclear bombs destroying America. People who got them worried enough to call the FBI. As CBS 2's Kristen Hartman learned, the Bureau's office here in Chicago is leading the investigation.
Were people concerned when they received it?
Yes, they were very concerned. It alarmed a lot of people.
Including Tracy Rizzo. A number of days ago, an envelope with a Chicago postmark and a handwritten address to her private investigations firm came in the mail.
And inside is this letter.
It says the Al-Qaeda organization has planted 160 nuclear bombs throughout the U.S. in schools, churches, stores, financial institutions, and government buildings. This is a suicide mission for us, it says. The writer, who claims to be Osama bin Laden, tells the reader the nukes are remotely controlled.
How would you quantify how you felt about it?
Well, it was clear that the writer wanted to scare me. Yes, it did frighten me.
Rizzo was one of eight people to contact the FBI in the Chicago area. Agencies in Oregon, California, Texas, and Florida also got the letter with the Chicago postmark.
There's items in that letter which is what leads us to believe that it's a hoax. There's several demands documented in this letter that are not fully coherent.
Special Agent Andre Zavala says much of the message doesn't add up. But in a post-9/11 world, the FBI simply can't let it go.
The FBI investigates every allegation of potential terrorism.
And why is that? I mean, even if this seems to be crazy.
We can't take that chance.
So why the threats? The writer alluded to how families in Afghanistan have to live. Now, the FBI says it will find that writer, and when it does, he could face 5 to 10 years in prison for each letter mailed, even if it is a hoax, Jim and Kate.
Because putting that kind of threat in the mail is a federal offense.
Exactly.
All right. Kristen Hartman, thank you.
Maybe it was Bruce Ivins. Well, and we heard in there that, of course, Oregon was also one of the other places. And, of course, we have been home to quite a bit of private military contractor terror drilling with Homeland Stupidity and Chertoff and Topoff and SAIC and all of that. But we note, yet again, Source Code Predictive Programming, the new film about a train bomb in Chicago. And now we have Al Ciaeda sending letters to Chicago. Just putting it on the record. Speculative in nature, if you will. We'll now move to another of our stories on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Liberals willing to trade blood and treasure for oil profits under Obama. And this, again, is a great piece from Activist Post, where we'll just note that it's perplexing, to say the very least, to see a high level of support for the unprovoked bombing on Libya on so-called progressive websites. And we can take a look at Ed Schultz and all the others. I believe I did see a headline this morning of Jeremy Scahill owns Ed Schultz. So hopefully the man who wrote the book on Blackwater was giving it to one of the fake left gatekeeper talking heads. I think to help spread this around and make a little more sense as we discuss the Libyan situation is just get all our other related geopolitical and Obamasiyah updates, such as this from Reuters. Obama authorizes secret support for Libya rebels. Now, is it possible that this Libyan adventure is Obama's Bay of Pigs? Is it possible that this was pushed on him by the Joint Chiefs and by the intelligence agencies to force his hand, such as Kennedy's in the Bay of Pigs? We'll launch an invasion, and then the guy will have no choice but to send the backup. But of course, Obama wouldn't blink. Of course he's going to send the backup, because he's a warmonger. Prince of Peace Prize notwithstanding. So in an effort to break this down, let's of course go to one of the best who breaks down historical geopolitical situations. It's Webster Tarpley on the Libya rebels. That would be the CIA secret army of Al Ciaeda terrorists, racists, and monarchists.
Echoes, you think, of the past here, Webster. The U.S. has tried this before, hasn't it? Supplying weapons to rebels in Afghanistan back in the 80s. That didn't turn out so well. Those weapons, indeed, that expertise being used against them now. Do you think we could see a repeat in Libya?
I'm very much afraid that it is. We had a study from West Point, the United States Military Academy, dated December 2007, which would indicate that the band of territory from Benghazi over to Tobruk, going through the city of Derna or Darna, this is an area with one of the highest densities of Islamic terrorism anywhere in the world. If you're looking for jihadis, if you're looking for mujahideen, this seems to be the world capital, especially according to the U.S. government definition of terrorism. What happened was the U.S. forces back in 2007 captured the Al-Qaeda personnel files in an area in Iraq near the Syrian border. And what they found was, in terms of terrorists per capita, Libya was by far the most active center for the recruitment of jihadis to go into Iraq and kill the U.S. and the NATO forces. Saudi Arabia sent more individual fighters, but in terms of population, Libya was the champion. But not all of Libya, especially this area of Benghazi and above all the city of Darna. Darna is a town of about 50 or 70,000 people, and they were the absolute world champion, number one in the world, in terms of sending terrorists into Iraq. And they were doing this, they beat Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, even though Riyadh is a city of 4 or 5 million people, and Darna is much smaller, again, 50 to 60,000 people by some estimates. It's so intense that in the city of Darna, you've got about 1,000 population. So that's enough to send one terrorist fighter. So one terrorist per 1,000 or 1,500 population at the most. And this is not simply a study that indicates the sociological tendency towards Al-Qaeda terrorism, because that's who this was. We have it now confirmed. If you look at the London Daily Telegraph this past Saturday, based on a report in Il Sole 24 Ore, the main business newspaper in Italy, they sent their correspondent to Darna and interviewed the commandant of the city, the rebel commander, and he's a guy called Hasidi, and he says, yes, I sent 25 fighters to go and kill the U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan, and he says he was there himself. He was captured near Peshawar. He may well have been an inmate of the Guantanamo Bay concentration camp. That part's not clear, but he is a former U.S. POW captured as a terrorist, and he is now commanding this amazing city of Darna, where you've got one terrorist fighter for every 1,000 or 1,500 of population. And this is the group that the U.S. regime, with Obama and Hillary Clinton and Cameron in Britain, are proposing to arm. They want to give them modern weapons. They want to give them a share of the $32 billion of Libyan assets that have been confiscated here. And they want them to have a share in the oil revenue. This is an absolute recipe for disaster. It's an exercise in insanity. And as you say, it shows they've learned absolutely nothing from the sad story of Afghanistan.
From freedomsphoenix.com, CIA agents in Libya aid airstrikes and meet rebels. And a fascinating bit from McClatchy. Libyan rebel leader spent much of last 20 years in suburban Virginia. Now, the bit of coverage this story has received is kind of an interest, you know, it's a human interest story. Oh, isn't it great? He went back to his home country to fight and when they need him. But I would imagine if this guy spent the last 20 years in Spookville, suburban Virginia, he has been groomed. And now it's his time to step up onto the game board of the grand chessboard. U.S. gunships will be on standby in NATO's Libya war. That's from Danger Room. And it's pretty much all in your face, as it's all becoming very in your face, as this CNN segment on Libya is called New World Order.
Speaking personally, because I don't think the U.S. interests at stake are vital. They're not nearly the most important interest the United States has in the greater Middle East, given all that's going on there, much less the rest of the world. And I also think the difficult part of this process or this intervention have yet to come. And there's all sorts of scenarios. There's the scenarios where the intervention, quote-unquote, succeeds. Either you have a ceasefire, and then what do you do? Because you have these opposing armies, these opposing sides in place. Or you can have situations where the intervention fails. And you have all sorts of questions then about what the United States does with Gaddafi. And even if it does succeed again, then we have all sorts of fundamental issues about exactly who it is we're helping. And are we so sure that the opposition will necessarily pursue an agenda that is in the interest of the United States or in the interest of the people of Libya? I'm very uncomfortable with such a large commitment, given the all these unknowns.
Go ahead, Jane, you want to talk?
Well, our Deputy National Security Advisor, Dennis McDonough, called the situation pre-no-fly zone Srebrenica on steroids. This is the Benghazi situation. And that, to remind viewers, is about what happened in Bosnia. We had a no-fly zone going, and yet there was this hellacious massacre in Srebrenica. And we only ended that conflict when we armed the Bosnians and the Croats. And then finally, Richard Holbrooke, our fabulously talented ambassador, who died just a few months ago, negotiated a settlement in Dayton. Why do I mention this? I mention this because there is no magic in a no-fly zone. I believe that the purposes of this mission have not been adequately articulated yet. And it also is not the late 90s. This is post 9/11 when we are involved in two interventions on the ground in Muslim countries. And so I think the context matters a lot. And I'm not sure enough thought was given to that. And there still is this conflict about what our mission truly is.
And let me bring that to Bob Kagan. I mean, there is a conflict about what the mission is. The United States says that Gaddafi must go. Members of the coalition say this is strictly a humanitarian mission. How can the coalition work together when they can't agree on what the goals are?
So that clip
while you could say it features, you know, the usual suspects, I would say that's pretty cream of the crop of front people for the roundtables and the New World Order agenda. That clip on CNN, which is called New World Order, features Richard Haass, president of the Council on Foreign Relations since July 2003, former U.S. Representative Jane Harman, soon to be the boss of the Globalist Training Center, the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and the neocon Robert Kagan, who is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a PNAC co-founder, and the neocon and former CIA director under Clinton, James Woolsey, who is a self-described Joe Lieberman Democrat, meaning he advocates bombing small and defenseless Muslim countries, who is also a Project for the New American Century supporter and a former member of the CIA-infested Freedom House, an Orwellian term that should really be called the Color Revolution House. We've noted all of those things, these phony intelligence-funded color revolutions in nations that happen when we need them to happen. Washington'sBlog.com asking the somewhat rhetorical question, is Nobel Peace Prize winner Obama more brutal than Bush? And another great animated video from Extra Normal highlights the hypocrisy on Libya. That would be the Libya liberals, who, when the talking heads on Microsoft General Electric television stations tell them to support it, they do. And why wouldn't they? Because what an amazing success so far the Obama-Saya reign has been, such as this. Obama says Miranda rights warning doesn't count for terror suspects. Obama raises American hypocrisy to a higher level. In 2002, he noted, toppling a brutal dictator, that's a dumb war. There's another entry in Obama, the candidate's greatest hits, which are now, of course, lies and misses, because you were hoodwinked by a Madison Avenue advertising campaign with catchy slogans and logos. Meanwhile, from the Deutsche Press Agency, and this, again, kind of tells our story as we connect the dots, from monstersandcritics.com, they pretty much carry Deutsche Press Agency reports, Obama inaugurates new U.S. mission building to the United Nations. The man commonly referred to as President Barack Obama, this past Tuesday inaugurated the new building of the U.S. mission to the United Nations in New York. Of course, the land donated to build the United Nations building, donated by the Rockefellers. Using the occasion to defend his decision to send U.S. airplanes against the Libyan regime of Gaddafi. The more than 30-story U.S. mission, which faces the U.N. headquarters on First Avenue in Manhattan, was completely rebuilt with security and terrorist-proof specifications after the terror attacks on 9/11. Obama dedicated it to former U.S. Secretary of Commerce Ronald Brown, he of the Clinton death pool, who died in a plane crash with 34 other people in 96 in Croatia when the U.S. tried to launch economic development, quote-unquote, in the Balkans after the Bosnian War. Former President and Rhodes Scholar Bill Clinton and Ron Brown's family members were present at the dedication ceremony. We believe that the world is more secure when we act collectively, Obama said. Continuing, quote, as I said last night, the burden of action should not always be America's alone, referring to his speech to explain the decision to lead airstrikes to enforce the UN-authorized no-fly zone over Libya. Obama said that NATO this week was taking over the responsibility to enforce the no-fly zone, so, oh, we can just wash our hands of it. And here we get to it. Last paragraph. He said the U.S. will be, quote, right there at the center of it, but not alone. Everybody stepping up, bearing responsibilities, carrying the cost of upholding peace and security. That's what it means to be United Nations. MySanAntonio.com reporting on the Obama angle of a story we reported to you last week on the Napolitano DHS angle. She said she had no idea that the ATF was letting guns walk to Mexican gun cartels, but now we have Obama saying he didn't inform Mexico of U.S. gun smuggling operation because he didn't know about it. I was unaware. You know, that sounds like one of our greatest presidents and one of his famous lines, and we'll touch on the Gipper in just a few short minutes. But first, we already referenced it, so let's illustrate the point. Lieberman says, let's bomb Syria.
What should we do about Syria?
Well, let me say first that it's very important for everybody to understand that what we're doing with the world community in Libya is what the Arab world wants us to do, what the Arab street wants us to do. So finally, we are on the side of the mass of people yearning to be free within the Arab world. Secondly, I think the world has made a very clear statement in Libya, which is being heard by both the Arab people and the Arab dictators elsewhere in the region. And I'd say with regard to Syria that Assad, the dictator there, ought to and probably is getting a very clear message. If he turns his weapons on his people and begins to slaughter them as Gaddafi did, he's going to run the risk of having the world community come in and impose a no-fly zone and protect civilian population just as we're doing in Libya. And therefore, Assad has one choice, and that is to negotiate with the freedom fighters in Syria to create an entirely different government there.
Let me just interrupt briefly, Senator Lieberman. We're running out of time, but are you suggesting that you would support some kind of international coalition to go in and do in Syria what we're doing now in Libya?
If Assad does what Gaddafi was doing, which is to threaten to go house to house and kill anybody who's not on his side, there's a precedent now that the world community has set in Libya, and it's the right one. We're not going to stand by and allow this Assad to slaughter his people like his father did years ago. And in doing so, we're being consistent with our American values, and we're also on the side of the Arab people.
And running out of time indeed. Another earth-shattering note from WikiLeaks. The head of British Petroleum, who has the interesting name of German Khan, Telegraph reports that he sees the Godfather films as a, quote, manual for life. And that's why we call them banksters and multi-generational serial killers. And we get back to all of our other little cronies here in the crumbling empire, the soon-to-be-rebuilt North American Union. Reporter confined to closet during Biden fundraiser. That's how the Fourth Estate is treated. Meanwhile, Springs man claims to have Obama records, sets birthers abuzz, and I believe this would be the very same guy that Michelle Bachmann is bringing on board, an evangelical Iowa birther for the 2012 Presidential Exploratory Committee. More on that from Gazette.com and God Discussion. And our last couple of notes on this main post, liberals willing to trade blood and treasure for oil and profits under Obama. Our last two main stories are of the history mystery variety. Geraldine Ferraro, political trailblazer, first female vice presidential candidate, passes away at the age of 75.
Let me help you with the difference, Ms. Ferraro, between Iran and the embassy in Lebanon. Iran, we were held by a foreign government. In Lebanon, you had a wanton terrorist action where the government opposed it.
Congresswoman Ferraro.
Let me just say, first of all, that I almost resent Vice President Bush, your patronizing attitude that you have to teach me about foreign policy.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
Geraldine was her formal name, used when making history. But this trailblazer was never Geraldine. She was always Jerry. Smart, savvy, blunt, feisty, a mother of three from the borough of Queens who never intended to stop there.
She didn't go out as a shy, retiring woman. Was going to wait her turn. She went out with both hands grabbing.
Writer Jimmy Breslin lived a few doors from Ferraro. He watched her take a law degree at night while raising three kids, become a criminal prosecutor, and then a congresswoman from a blue-collar district.
Those are my people from Queens. I love it!
Jerry Ferraro understood hardball politics.
Never was that clearer than in the 1984 vice presidential debate when George Bush attacked.
Let me help you with the difference, Ms. Ferraro, between Iran and the embassy in Lebanon.
Let me just say, first of all, that I almost resent, Vice President Bush, your patronizing attitude that you have to teach me about foreign policy.
When she and Mondale lost in a landslide, Ferraro was typically blunt. Political veteran Esther Fuchs recalls Ferraro's moxie.
Jerry Ferraro said the only way Democrats were going to beat Ronald Reagan was if they had God on the ticket, and she was busy.
Jerry Ferraro was on the ticket. For Hillary Clinton and Sarah Palin and the many yet to come, that has made all the difference.
Our final note here on this fake, you know, phony left-right paradigm. We don't put any stock in the two-controlled party system, but it's all connected. It's all a nice, big, happy family. The Skull and Bones-owned Time magazine notes that freedom is too good for Hinckley. That's right. We take the 30th anniversary stroll to the Bushy Knoll and the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan.
President Reagan was just 2 months into his first term on that fateful day in 1981. He wrapped up a speech to union members at the Washington Hilton Hotel and stepped outside to leave. Flanked by Secret Service agents, he smiled broadly and waved at passersby who had gathered, hoping to catch a glimpse of the new president. When John Hinckley Jr. opened fire from behind the nearby rope line, it took him less than 2 seconds to wound the president, the White House press secretary, a Secret Service agent, and a D.C. police officer. It took much longer for the full picture of the events of that day to emerge, including how close the president came to death. It's all laid out in the book Rawhide Down, The Near Assassination of Ronald Reagan. And joining us now is author and Washington Post reporter Del Quentin Wilbur and Dr. Joseph Giordano. He led the George Washington University Hospital trauma team that operated on the president. Dr. Giordano and Del Wilbur, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for being here.
Del, I'm going to start with you. This was a day that got a huge amount of news coverage at the time. I happen to know because I was there as a reporter. There was a television camera rolling when John Hinckley shot the president. What more were you able to learn writing this book?
I learned that Ronald Reagan was really lucky to have survived. I mean, he was a total beneficiary of circumstance. There's, you know, Hinckley unleashed 6 shots in 1.7 seconds. And he would have killed Reagan. He would have hit him. I mean, maybe really wounded him badly if Jerry Parr, the lead Secret Service agent, hadn't acted so quickly and had the training to do so. And he, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did Parr do?
Parr, Hinckley unleashed these 6 shots so quickly. And Parr grabbed the president, who was right next to him, Jerry Parr, the Secret Service agent, thrusting him into the car so fast. We've seen that iconic video so many times. His quick actions got Reagan out of Hinckley's direct fire and behind the shielded limousine door. But that still wasn't enough, because the 6th shot that no one knew it for hours or even minutes knew that it hit Reagan had ricocheted off the side of the limousine, slipped through a gap that big and hit Reagan in the side, and they tumbled into the car.
And there was another fateful decision that Parr made in the car on the way back to the White House.
Jerry Parr on the way back to the White House with Reagan initially thinks Reagan's okay. And he gets on the radio and says, Rawhide is okay, Rawhide is okay. And that's a Secret Service code name, the title of the book. Well, on the way back, Reagan starts looking not so great. Ashen, plenty of pain in his chest, bright frothy blood in his lips. Parr makes that decision, we're going to the hospital, not the ultra-secure White House. As Dr. Giordano will attest, that decision saved Reagan's life.
Dr. Giordano, how prepared was George Washington Hospital to handle a president who had been shot?
Well, Judy, I'll take that. I would imagine they would be fairly well positioned, seeing as how they were running presidential succession drills at the exact same time, called Operation Nine Lives, with a Bush waiting in the wings. So many interesting things to dive into here, and I'm glad I found the clip, a new clip, with Judy Woodruff on PBS NewsHour, and we'll take a quick couple of sentences from an article from Charles Overbeck on Periscope on Monday, March 30th, 1982. I believe it's 81. At about 2 o'clock, Ronald Reagan left the Washington Hilton after giving a speech to the AFL-CIO. Flanked by Secret Service agents, he was walking to his limousine when John Hinckley Jr., childhood friend of Neil Bush, surged forward, .22 pistol in hand, and opened fire. A bullet ricocheted off the limousine and took Reagan down, but he lived. That's the official story. One must wonder, then, why correspondent Judy Woodruff, who, as she just mentioned, was there, she was a CNN anchor for a while. At the time, she was in NBC News Special Reports. Judy Woodruff, reporting for NBC immediately after the assassination attempt, insisted that at least one shot came from an overhang over Reagan's limousine. Woodruff later reported that the shot came from a Secret Service agent who was stationed on the overhang, which researcher John Judge has dubbed the Bushy Knoll. That, my friends, is everything from MediaMonarchy.com. For the remainder of this episode, we will swim around to our related sister sites in the media kingdom. And let's get everything from the newest site, HolyHexes.com, covering all your pop culture needs. Belief Blog has an interesting post that, again, you know, perhaps it's a little irrational, but I totally hate sports and the institution of it and the praise and adoration and passion devoted to it. So when I saw an article like this, I had to immediately put it up. Amid March Madness, some Christians decry sports worship. Believe it or not, there were Duke University students who were fired up the day after they lost in the NCAA basketball tournament. They may be a minority, but those students feel like the same passion that goes into cheering on the basketball team should go into worshiping the Lord. The article goes on to get into a little bit of tribalism, but we're going to have to keep moving because we could have the major discovery of Christian history. Metal books found in a Jordanian cave could change biblical history.
British archaeologists say a collection of ancient books discovered in a cave in Jordan could be the greatest find since the Dead Sea Scrolls. This ancient collection of 70 tiny books could unlock some of the secrets of the earliest days of Christianity. Academics are divided as to their authenticity, but say that if verified, they could prove pivotal. Fox News takes a look at what makes these books so special.
Take a look. Here's a picture. The books are made of leaded metal. They're embedded with images, symbols, and words that appear to refer to the Messiah, the crucifixion, and resurrection. Many of the books are sealed, meaning they could be the lost collection of sealed codices mentioned in the book of Revelation.
But with all the hype comes drama. The Periscope Post reports the books were discovered by a Jordanian Bedouin, but that's not who owns them today. The books were subsequently acquired by Hassan Seda, an Israeli Bedouin farmer in the Galilee, who still has possession of them and is keeping them in hiding. Farmer Seda says they were found by his great-grandfather and have been in his family for 100 years. The Jordanian government has vowed to use, quote, all means at its disposal to recover the artifacts. So are the books worth the effort? According to The Telegraph, some experts aren't so convinced. Israeli archaeological sources have been dismissive of the find, suggesting that Mr. Seda has appeared every few years trying to sell the codices. They said examinations had shown them to be forgeries. But the BBC's religious affairs correspondent Robert Pigott interviewed an expert who says the evidence speaks for itself.
There have been notorious forgeries in recent years, but Professor Davis says that although he can't be sure how old these books are, they're not fakes. Tests on the deeply corroded lead show the books were not made recently, and the text is consistent with early Christianity.
Finally, Gawker finds the whole thing a little theatrical, saying the story sounds like a prequel to the Da Vinci Code. What is in them exactly? According to Raiders of the Lost Ark, probably some kind of face-melting ghost. But besides that, almost anything. Slash fan fiction, probably. Oh well, as long as Robert Langdon is in them, I'll still read them. According to reports, if the books are authentic, they'd be the earliest Christian writings ever discovered. I'm Christina Hartman for Newsy.com. Multiple sources, the real story.
So just to reiterate for you from the Daily Mail, adding to the intrigue, many of the books are sealed, prompting academics to speculate they are actually the lost collection of codices mentioned in the Bible's book of Revelation. Furthermore, on HolyHexes.com, God had a wife. Her name was Asherah, but it was censored from the records. And you shouldn't be surprised that a book written by men would be censored and altered over the course of a couple thousand years. Speaking of book, Book of Mormon opens on Broadway. We have more on that from CNN and Wikipedia, and you can learn about Avenue Q and South Park and how those creators got together to open a musical about the cult of Mormonism. The BBC reporting on Baptism by Fire, Russia's trend of dipping children in frozen rivers when an amateur video of a screaming naked boy being plunged by a priest into an ice hole in Siberia appeared on the web. It caused a massive outcry in the Russian media and blogosphere.
Some folks would call it baptism. Others would call it torture. The French agency Press reporting the Vatican hailing the historic ruling on crucifixes in schools. The Vatican last Friday welcomed this historic ruling by the European Court of Human Rights that said displaying crucifixes in schools in Italy did not breach the rights of non-Catholics. Neither does the sexual abuse. Such as this from the Oregonian. Washington woman says Jesuit priests abused happened every single day. For 40 years, Catherine Mendez kept the story of her abuse at the hands of a Jesuit priest to herself, but the details were never far from mind. She had been 11 years old when she was raped at St. Mary's Mission School in Omak, Washington, moments after she scuffled with another student and was then brought into the office of Father John J. Morse. The abuse continued from 6th into 8th grade. Every day, every single day, it was a nightmare. I was always looking over my shoulder. But now, last week, 3 years after she came forward as the initial plaintiff in a 21-plaintiff federal lawsuit in Spokane, Washington, against priests from St. Mary's, a suit filed 3 months before the Oregon province of the Society of Jesus declared bankruptcy, Mendez, now 55, is poised for a measure of justice. The Northwest Jesuits and their insurers agreed to pay $166.1 million in a bankruptcy settlement aimed at compensating nearly 500 people with active claims of sexual abuse by priests, and these people come from Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Washington. Let's get all our pop culture headlines from holyhexes.com. Christian prophets warn California about to get a massive quake. We have reported that before, but we will report it again. Durable doomsday preacher predicts world's end again. Yeah, that's, I got to remind you, you guys, May 21st. It's coming very soon. We're talking about Harold Camping. But according to a poll from Belief Blog, few believe natural disasters are signs from God. A fascinating piece from The Australian, a spiritual guide to climate change, because climate change is the religion of the New World Order. Meanwhile, the stars align for the upcoming royal wedding for our soon-to-be Antichrist as he marries his cousin. Meanwhile, Palin visits Israel as she mulls a presidential run. That's from CNN. Religion may become extinct in nine nations, study says. We can tie that along. As our old religions fall away, the new religion of climate change. That'll be the first global revolution, as we already noted. You may have heard of a book called The Shack from a few years ago that was quite a hit within the spiritual community. Well, the bad update is that the author of The Shack has now come out and completely rejected religion.
The Shack is the house of the soul. It's the house on the inside that people help you build. And some of us didn't get good help. And so it becomes a place you hide your secrets and you store your addictions and, you know, all the ways that you were told you would never amount to anything and that you didn't matter and you weren't valuable to anyone. You store all those things in the shack. And then, you know, it's full of shame and you use lies to hide all your secrets and you try to just survive. To me, it was a thin layer of perfectionist performance that covered up an ocean of shame. And if somebody came through and started poking a hole through, up comes the shame and you learn how to spin it back on them so that it's their problem and not your problem. Most of our hurt comes through relationships, and I absolutely believe that our healing will come through relationships, and that includes our relationship with God and includes our relationship with the people in our lives. Religion won't heal us, and I think that's a main issue in the book. Religion can't.
Last week, the occult magician Harry Houdini couldn't escape from the Google Doodle on his 137th birthday. Meanwhile, Jim Beam has a new bourbon with a bite. It's called the Devil's Cut. 100,000-plus people pressure Apple to shut down the Gay Cure app. Crystal Cathedral Sex Covenant stirs controversy. That's from the Los Angeles Times. That's a choir talking about having sex at a church. And as if that wasn't ridiculous enough, how about Texans pole dancing for Jesus?
At first there was Jesus juice, now there's pole dancing for Jesus. Kristen King joins us now with a preview about what's coming up tonight at 9. I'm nervous about this topic.
It's very exciting. It's actually very simple, too. Right now, the class is only being held every second Sunday of the month up in Spring at Best Shape of Your Life Studios. And the owner, Crystal Deans, teaches the class. It's very fun, very comfortable. It's for women only. They listen to upbeat contemporary Christian music, and you have to bring your church program with you in order to get into the class. Now, you're probably wondering how you can mix pole dancing and Jesus. Well, Crystal says she's trying to get past the stigma of pole dancing being a stripper thing. It's more about taking care of the body God gave you, feeling good about yourself, and getting in shape. So, we're going to talk about it at 9 o'clock.
Is anyone ever offended by this? Pole dancing for Jesus?
Well, some people are. I asked Crystal that, and she did say that she's had some people come to her door, like, thumping the Bible on the door, being like, you know, how can you do this? But, you know, she tells me that she just doesn't care. You know, God doesn't judge. She doesn't judge other people. It's what she wants to do, and she feels comfortable with it. So we're going to explain all that coming up at 9. We're actually going to hear from Crystal. We're going to talk to a person who's taken the class, and you're going to see me do a few moves, too.
Pole dancing?
Yeah. Tune in at 9.
We will, too. Okay. We will, too. Tune in. Melinda, back to you.
As if that wasn't ridiculous enough, and of course they dangle the salacious tease of watching the sexy news girl do a pole dance for Jesus. But let's continue to completely blur the line between satire and pop culture as art imitates life.
It's the Onion Radio News. Jesus surprises the 700 Club with a walk-on appearance. This is Doyle Redland reporting. The popular Christian affairs program, The 700 Club, received a surprise guest appearance today when Jesus Christ dropped by the set and chatted briefly with host Pat Robertson.
Pat, they can't stay long. I just wanted to swing by and say hello to you and the whole 700 Club gang. I love the show. It's just terrific. And hey, how about this audience?
The 130 Christ fans in attendance then hooted wildly and gave up enthusiastic applause unto him. Doyle Redland for the Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
Shifting from the light to the dark at breakneck speed, California woman attempts the murder of her children and herself to avoid suffering through the tribulation.
Well, a horrifying story out of the Antelope Valley. Cheryl Gatwiza has more about a mother that tried to kill her two children, actually did kill her, tried to kill her two children, and then herself.
This is how neighbors and friends know Lynn Benedetto, a loving, caring, stay-at-home mom. But this is how sheriff's deputies know her. She's now behind bars for trying to kill her 11 and 14-year-old daughters, then herself.
Very, very nice people. This is very out of left field for us.
Abel Fernandez lives across the street from the Benedetto family. Friday night around 5:30, he saw a swarm of deputies surround his neighborhood in the 41,000 block of River Rock Lane.
Officers, gun drawn, about 8 police cars. And a helicopter. They seemed to be going through the house, and they were here most of the evening. There was a note, and there was a lot of blood in the house.
Detectives say the 47-year-old mom thought the world was coming to an end. And with recent events in Japan and the turmoil in the Middle East, Benedetto didn't want her daughters to go through it. So she took a box cutter and paring knife, slit her daughter's throats and wrists, then did the same thing to herself. You can see her wounds in her mugshot. Detectives say Benedetto drove her daughters and herself to this home in Lancaster. It's a friend's house. She opened up the garage, wrapped her daughters in some blankets. This is where all three of them were going to die. But detectives say her plans were spoiled when her friend showed up to the home unexpectedly early. He immediately called 911.
There was two ambulances that showed up basically simultaneously. I just heard that one of the sheriff sergeants tell the ambulance driver that there was one in the house and one outside. The first one that came out appeared to be probably the older of the two, and she had bandages on the side of her neck. And in the second one, I really couldn't see any bandages.
The girls were treated at a local hospital. Late tonight, we spoke with Andrew Benedetto, father and husband. He says the girls are doing okay. They have a lot of support from family and friends. In the meantime, their mother remains behind bars on $1 million bail. Cheryl Gatwiza, KTLA 5 News.
Meanwhile, TSA accused of firing an agent for being a witch. And a couple posts from CryptoMundo.com, one of the other great sites from Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect. Mothman curse blamed for Trump stalking. This is an actor who blames being involved in a film about the Mothman cursed him, and that made him go crazy and stalk Ivanka Trump. The other Cryptomundo.com note, dog born to sheep in China. But back to the pedophile priest. Two more retired Philly priests placed on leave in the ongoing abuse probe. That's from CNN. And from NPR, Vatican experts debate exorcism, Satanism, and the Internet at a recent conference where they note surge in Satanism sparks rise in demand for exorcists. That's from the Telegraph as well. Rise in demand for exorcism recalls horror movie trend. That's right. The film out now is The Rite. So now everybody thinks they're possessed. The film in the 70s was The Exorcist, and everybody thought they were possessed. Catholicism creating its own problem, reaction, solution. We now shift to my last site in the kingdom, foodworldorder.com. Toxic waste bubblegum recalled for lead contamination. That's right. From Food Freedom, believe it or not, there was actually a product on the market called Toxic Waste Short Circuits Bubblegum. How's that for subliminally mind-warping your children into thinking toxic waste is fun and tastes good, too? Ironically, the Pakistani product has now been recalled for elevated levels of lead per the FDA, and the candies look like spent uranium fuel pellets from a nuclear plant. And we do provide the flashback to January of this year on foodworldorder.com, as we noted, another product from this same company where we advised you not to eat the toxic waste brand nuclear sludge chew bars. And the first story we hit on the most recent episode of New World Next Week, food inflation kept hidden in tinier and tinier bags, or Nabisco is cheating you out of precious saltines. For more analysis on that, again, go to the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com. Some of our other headlines on Food World Order. McDonald's launches plan to Soylent Green its menu. That would be the World Wildlife Fund getting into bed with Ronald McDonald and giving birth to a darling sustainability program. This from grist.org. McDonald's is going to be less bad for the future of life on Earth, it promises. With the help of the eugenics-fronted World Wildlife Fund, the 32,000 store chain is pledged to do the following to improve its sourcing of raw materials. Blah-bitty-blah, Amazon biome, chicken nuggets, soybeans, coffee with third-party sustainable sources, blah-blah-blah, palm oil. But the main warning we want to add for you here is something that is mentioned in the independent.com link for you in this story, independent.co.uk, I should say, to beware and look out for the Life Kitchen coming this summer to a gated subdivision sector near you. That's L-Y-F-E. Love your food every day. This coming from ex-McDonald's cronies, and they are capitalizing on the organic craze, and of course, misdirecting it, because when mass amounts of people start to awake to the injustices that are being shoved down their throat on a generational basis, you're going to get tricked and misdirected and hoodwinked by slick-talking cronies and wreckers and agents provocateur. You get that? Going right along with the Mickey D's and World Wildlife Eugenics Fund, ConAgra broadens their campaign to feed hungry kids. And we do have a clip for this. They produced a whole TV special with Al Roker hosting. As we note the irony of having a huge fat guy host a special about hungry kids, ConAgra Foods, whose social cause is ending child hunger, starting their largest campaign ever, yada yada. Child hunger ends here. We give the link for you. The entire show is posted up on YouTube. But one of the other things you'll find as you dig through this story is, of course, the corporatism and the implanting of ideas on all your favorite television shows. Of course, they'll announce it behind the scenes that, oh yeah, we're putting environmental-themed messages, because that's what the first global revolution talks about. Manipulating the media to unite humanity against the common goal of climate change. So if you dig around this story, you'll see that this has infested other stories. And as we note, this campaign from ConAgra is getting a little help with some whores on television, and that would be the Desperate Housewives. Furthermore, on foodworldorder.com, Codex Alimentarius and Food Irradiation in the U.S., that's from activistpost.com, Russia bans food from 6 Japanese prefectures, store food, or rather store brand food, eating up market share. Junk food oxymoron, Frito-Lay tries all natural chips, that's from the Globe and Mail, and as we noted on the most recent New World Next Week, Sun Chips abandoned their biodegradable bag because it was too noisy. Free-range egg ban shuts Prince Edward Island bed and breakfast. The worst Texas drought in 44 years, eroding wheat and beef supplies. That's from Bloomberg. The Milwaukee Brewers deal lets fans order stupid food from their smartphones. That's from bizofbaseball.com. Meanwhile, Boston to track expiration dates for school grub after an incident. And the final note from today's THV.com, Florida parents want one student out over their food allergy. And we did have a clip for that, but we're just out of time for any other remaining clips. But that's a fascinating area to spend a little time on. EPA reports radiation found in American milk, and in our compilation of clips on the updates on the Japanese crisis earlier in the show, you heard brief references to the radioactive milk that has been found in as close as Washington, my neighbor to the north. More on that from digitaljournal.com. Meanwhile, ABC News has the stunning blockbuster expose. Study says you can reduce your BPA exposure by cutting down on consumption of packaged foods. Meanwhile, Americans staged nationwide protests over genetically modified foods. That's from Press TV. Protesters in Salem, Oregon denounce influence of Monsanto. That's from DailyEmerald.com. And Grist reporting on the reversing of roles as farmers now sue Monsanto over GMO seeds. Usually it's been Monsanto suing farmers over the supposed theft of their wonderful genetically modified project. But our last note here comes from Natural News, and it was the Rally for the Right to Know. Last Saturday, March 26th, social activists and other activist organizations around the country blasted out Rally for the Right to Know. They happened in California, Washington, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Missouri, New Mexico, Oregon, Tennessee, Vermont, and Wisconsin. You can find out much more on that, facebook.com/rallyfortherighttoknow2011. And unfortunately, I didn't pull it off in time, but I connected to someone involved in the Salem rally, a guy named Gary, but it's probably my fault. It fell through the cracks, and there are so many other things going on. I was going to do an interview in advance of the protest, but obviously that didn't happen. But hopefully we can connect again to still draw attention to this story. MillionsAgainstMonsanto.org. We are just about out of time here on this amazingly jam-packed April Fool's 2011 episode 212 from MediaMonarchy.com. A few closing notes we want to make. Of course, yes, yesterday I published a new mixtape. It's an hour. It's fantastic because it can't be news and politics all the time. I will be a guest this coming Wednesday on the IntelHub.com and their live radio show on Oracle Broadcasting. That's this coming Wednesday, April 6th at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. But of course, I will record that and share it and podcast it out with you and for you. And our final note, with all that we've had here, you may remember that our closing slogan here for the longest time was one that perhaps it's really time to bring back. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been episode 212 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, reminding you, one, don't hate the media, become the media, but perhaps now more than ever, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send newstips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.